Hello, this is Patricia Waldron with Locally Sourced Science. In honor of Pollinator Week, I'm talking with Dr. Robin Radcliffe, a senior lecturer in wildlife and conservation medicine at Cornell University. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, you normally work with much larger animals like giraffes and buffalo and rhinoceroses, but you also teach a honeybee health course for Cornell veterinary students. How did you first get interested in working with bees?
Well, actually, my interest in honeybees started as a boy. I was lucky enough to have a grandfather who took me bee hunting. And for your listeners who don't know what bee hunting is, it's basically following honeybees that you trap on flowers back to their home, usually in a bee tree. So we did that on our farm in Wisconsin, and we were able to find some wild colonies of honeybees.
Oh, wow. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Do you currently keep your own hives?
Yep. I have two hives right now, and I'm really interested in the way wild bees manage health at the level of the colony. Having honeybees helps me better understand their biology and behavior and some of the health concerns that they're facing today.
So how did veterinarians get into the business of helping bees?
Well, in North America, they are required now by law to work with beekeepers whenever antibiotics are prescribed. And that's part of a new regulation that not just includes honeybees, but all livestock. And the focus of this is to prevent overuse or misuse of antibiotics, and particularly antibiotic resistance developing. And so honeybees are actually considered livestock. And even though they have six legs and exoskeleton instead of a backbone like most of our patients. But interestingly, veterinary medicine in other parts of the world have included bee health as part of their curriculum for a long time, especially in South America and also in Europe. So North America comes to this kind of late in the game.
So now that we're catching up, what kind of services can veterinarians offer to beekeepers?
The obvious one is when beekeepers call and they want to treat a colony. Usually they're treating for fowl brood. There's two kinds of fowl brood, American fowl brood and European fowl brood, and it's a bacterial pathogen that infects the brood or the growing larva of the honeybees. And it's particularly troublesome, especially American fowl brood, because it produces spores, which are really long-lived in the environment. They can live 70 to 100 years. Basically, it's required if you have American fowl brood to contact the state apiarist, and they will come out and supervise destruction of your hive. And they literally dig a hole, burn it, and bury it because of these long-lived spores. But I think the value of a veterinarian to beekeepers is much more than as a prescriber of medicines or as a pharmacist, because beekeepers have been using antibiotics on their own for a long time, and they probably know better than most veterinarians what to look for and the signs of fowl brood. And I think the real value for veterinarians is the problem-solving approach that they bring to health, and in particular, preventative health. So we can diagnose and treat, but I think preventative health is something that honeybees increasingly need, because one of the lessons that we've learned in the last decade is that these increasingly common episodes of colony collapse or winter losses of honeybees, which are at record levels now, more than 50% of colonies are not surviving the winter. They seem to be multifactorial. There's many different causes that are leading to these honeybee declines. Some of them are pathogens, some of them are nutrition, some of them are perhaps pesticide related. So having a problem-solving approach where you can be one part of a team together with the beekeeper, I think is a really good thing. And it's going to take some time to develop those relationships, but I think in the long run, honeybees and the health of honeybees will be benefited by having this relationship.
So you almost have to be like bee detectives to figure out what's affecting the hive.
I like that. I think that's a good analogy.
How do your students feel about this new animal they're working with?
They love it. Our students really love it. They can't get enough. We're lucky to have the Cornell Master Beekeeping Program here at Cornell, and that was put together by Emma Mullen at the Dice Lab, and it's a wonderful online certification program. And so our veterinary students take parts of the Cornell Master Beekeeping Program as an online course first, and then we have like a week-long workshop where the students get out and work with the bees. We have two different bee labs here at Cornell, the Dice Lab, and then also Liddell, where Dr. Tom Seeley does his amazing behavioral studies. So we're very well positioned here at Cornell to train students. And I not only train veterinary students, but also undergraduates. So they get exposed at different levels in their education to honeybees and honeybee health.
How is working with bees different from working with other types of livestock on farms?
That's a great question. I think one of the things that I like most about working with honeybees is that you can't just be knowledgeable about health and veterinary medicine. You have to have knowledge of other disciplines. So you need to, you should know about ecology and biology, and particularly as it relates to the honeybee. I think one of the biggest things that I've recognized in my studies of honeybee health is that the problems that we're seeing in managed honeybees is very different than what we're seeing in the wild. So most of the problems that managed honeybees have, in other words, the honeybees that are kept in hives by both backyard beekeepers and commercial beekeepers, they're problems of management. One of the things that Dr. Seeley has spent the last part of his career studying is the health of wild honeybees compared to the health of domestic honeybees. And there's some very significant differences and some real lessons that we can learn from studying wild bees. Just some common ones that are maybe people wouldn't even think of is the size of the nest cavity is very different in a honeybee colony in a hive compared to a bee tree. It's much larger. And that has implications because the larger the colony, the more brood they have, and many of these diseases, especially the mites, they reproduce in the brood. So more brood, more mites, and that's one of the major causes of colony collapse is the mites not only suck the blood or the hemolymph of an adult bee, which is analogous to our blood, but they also transmit a lot of viruses when they do that. And that leads to collapse of the colonies. Another one is swarming. Beekeepers prevent swarming through a number of mechanisms because they don't want to lose half their bees. But swarming is a normal part of a wild honeybee colony's reproduction. So by suppressing swarming, we may be impacting their genetics. And we also are, it's another way that mites are controlled in wild populations, because whenever the queen leaves with half her brood, a large portion of mites leave with them and the brood cycle is broken. In other words, the queen is not there to lay eggs, and that is where the mites reproduce. In beekeeping situations, we space our hives very closely together. So there's a lot of transfer of bees from hive to hive through robbing, which is where bees from a healthy colony go in and steal honey and also diseases from a weaker hive. There's bee drift, where bees can actually go into the wrong hive because they're so close together. We don't have that problem in wild honeybees because bee trees are not spaced closely together. They're usually about a kilometer apart, actually. And there's a variety of other things that we're learning about wild honeybees that are different from how we manage them in captivity. And I think we could really learn a lot from evaluating, you know, what bees do in nature, because that's kind of the normal. And one of the things we learn in veterinary school from the very first part of our curriculum is learn the normal first. So before we study disease, we learn what normal tissues look like. And I think the same could be applied to honeybee health.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're really treating the whole hive and not just like an individual animal, say a cow that has like a infection.
Exactly. And so in ecology and when you look at the honeybee, it's called a superorganism. For folks who might not understand the idea of a superorganism, I think it's important to think about it in terms of a regular organism. So like you and me, we're made up of cells, but our individual cells cannot by themselves survive. The honeybee colony is the same thing. The individual honeybees, the workers, they cannot survive on their own. They have no way to reproduce. They do all the work. They forage, they clean the cells, they build the comb, they take care of the queen. The queen lays all the eggs and ensures that the population is strong. And the drone goes out and breeds with queens to ensure there's good genetic diversity. So if you think of a honeybee colony as a superorganism, just like the cells in your own body, I think that's kind of a good analogy, because Together, it makes an organism, and by itself, they cannot survive.
That makes a lot of sense.
This superorganism concept, I think, is really important to understand as a veterinarian, because it could be considered similar to how you look at herd health with a group of dairy cattle, for example. You're looking at the population and not the individual animal. The difference is your patient is much smaller, and you're generally not looking at each individual bee like you would an individual cow. Probably more important than looking at the individual bee is looking at the colony, its food reserves, how healthy the brood is, and you're looking at brood patterns, and you're looking at kind of the bigger picture health of the colony instead of isolating out a single bee.
Do you ever test the honey?
You can test the honey. There are a number of different things that can, like, for example, if you do use antibiotics, most of the antibiotics have a withholding period. In other words, you can't harvest the honey. In fact, you can't even treat a colony with the antibiotics while there's honey, a honey super, or the super is the box that holds the honey while it's on there. So to treat the colony, you would remove the honey super, treat the colony as recommended, and then you would return the honey super. There's other things you can test for in honey. The spores for foul brood can be found in the honey. And there are also pesticide residues that can be evaluated by testing the honey. So there are ways that you can get good information by testing the honey. But there's a lot of other things that we would look for as a veterinarian before we would test the honey.
Interesting. Considering recent declines in honeybee populations, how do you feel about the future of the honeybee in the U.S.?
Well, I'm very optimistic because I know that wild honeybees are doing very well. Dr. Seeley and I recently did a survey of the honeybee population in Shandaugan Forest, State Forest here, just outside of Brooktondale. And the bee colonies there are doing really well. And Dr. Seeley has been studying the honeybees in the Arnott Forest for decades, and they're also doing very well. So Dr. Seeley did note that there was a significant decline in honeybees in the early 90s when the varroa mite came in. And the varroa mite is an introduced exotic mite from Asia. When the mite did jump host to the western honeybee, which is the honeybee that we manage here in North America, it did cause a significant decline of wild honeybees, but they recovered. And they're back to the levels that Dr. Seeley was studying in the 1970s. So I'm very optimistic. And I think the last thing I would say about the honeybee is because it's managed both in small backyard beekeeping operations and also part of commercial operations, the honeybee, if not managed well and their health is not managed well, could significantly impact health of other pollinators, other insects. We know that many of the diseases, including varroa mite, can be transmitted on flowers. Dr. Seeley's recent grad student, David Peck, has a wonderful video of a honeybee landing on a flower and the mite jumping off the flower and then jumping back on another bee. The honeybee is really has the potential to impact the health of other wild pollinators. So if we don't maintain a high level of health in the honeybee, we could adversely impact these native pollinators that are already in decline. So I think the bee veterinarian and beekeepers, it's incumbent upon us to keep honeybees very healthy. So I think if we maintain a healthy honeybee population, it'll also help us maintain the health of our wild pollinators as well.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you. It was fun, and I hope folks learn more about honeybees because it's a really fascinating area of science.